And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
Do you want another chance with the same core?
What are you talking about, like this whole team or just...
You, John, Austin, Morgan.
I mean...
Willie.
Yeah. We all got years left on our contracts. I mean, I don't know. It's not up to us, but we got a lot of belief in this group. We got a lot of belief in that core and... Yeah. It sucks right now, but we got belief.
I mean, you feel for your teammates, you feel for everybody involved in the loss, and you know, it takes some time to get over these. You know, we're proud of our season, things that we were able to do over the course of it. I love these guys. You know, I don't want to change.
I said you can't take anything away from Florida because they played an incredible series. They did a great job. we were in positions to win in games 1, 2, and 3 and didn't handle that well. So that stings. But I thought our team left it all out there here tonight. And then, of course, we had a great regular season. And we found our way through the first round and beat a very, very good Tampa team. So I think there's a lot to like about that season. You know, this one stings.
All right, James. Well, it's over. The 2022-2023 Leafs win one round, go out in the second round. We could kind of see this coming, obviously, after game 3 when they go down 0-3. They win game 4, they lose game 5. Your overall takeaways, we'll get into lots. We'll talk about Keefe, Dubas, Starr, Shanahan, everything. But your top level reaction to this?
Yeah, I think it's disappointing. You know, it's they had a real opportunity. They played really well for stretches in the series. And, you know, I think Sheldon Keefe summed it up really well when he said we lost the series in the first 3 games because, you know, they... You can argue, you look at the balance of play and things like that, the Leafs were the better team and that they deserved a better fate, but they also just shot themselves in the foot, especially in game 3. That's why game 3 was so disappointing, because you win that one and then all of a sudden this is a completely different series and you give yourself some margin for error. You know, a 5-game series, only getting 2 goals in each of the games, despite having such a high-powered offense, you're not going to win a series like that. So, you know, I think at the end of the day, that's going to be the story, is they didn't produce enough again.
Yep. Well, and to me, they lost, like you pointed out there, to me, they lose the series in game 3. I mean, game 1, some costly errors. Obviously, Bobrovsky is... quite good.
Well, game 2 they had the lead too, right? Like, I mean, game 2 is a lost opportunity as
game
well.
Game 2 they played well and they got goal lead for the most part. And then game 3 they just, I mean, I thought it was really telling that after game 4 one of the players, Justin Hall, said afterwards that he thought there was just more urgency, and it's like, well, that's great, but it's like, it's game 4. You're down 0-3. Like, you needed that in game 3 and again, like, I think it's important to point, like, they care, they want to win, but there was just something missing in that game where you can't go down 0-3. And then even game 5, James, like, I thought I mean, the shots were 9-1 at one point early in that period, but I actually thought they played pretty well in that first. But like, you get two power plays and you don't score. And that's like, it's just like all those little things. Like you mentioned their offense. We saw this obviously in that Columbus series most famously. But this is a thing where you have all these, or you have these four big stars, and you look in the series, Nylander gets two goals, Marner gets one, Matthews and Tavares, the two highest paid players on the team, don't score. Like, you can't win if your two best, yeah, or like two of your highest paid players do not score in a five games or in a seven game series. Like, you just don't have a chance, I don't think.
Yeah. People can talk about goaltending or you know, the defensive mistakes or whatever, but if you score 10 goals in five games, you're not winning the series. Like,
yeah.
And it was even a problem against Tampa at the end of the series. They were having a hard time breaking through and scoring. So, you know, part of the challenge is there just weren't a lot of power plays. Like Dom, our stats guy at The Athletic, had a great stat. This is one of the series with the fewest power plays basically in the Cap era. Had the fewest since 2015 of any series in the playoffs. And that greatly favors Florida, who really struggle on the penalty kill.
Yes. And there was a stretch where they went like, I think, five periods without getting a power play. However, they did have opportunities on the power play at important moments and just didn't score. And like, I mean, when you get your opportunities and there's not a lot of power plays, you're not getting a lot of power plays, you have to find a way to score, and they just didn't.
But what I'm saying though, Jonas, is like, if your team is built to win in part on the power play, and that's hard how you win during the regular season, and it just doesn't exist in the series.
Yeah, but you're giving them a break. Like, they had opportunities, James. They got two power plays in that first period and didn't score on one. Like, they had opportunities.
I know, but you're not going to score on 50% of your... Like, if you only get two a game... Like, they were 18% on the power play in the series, which is fine.
They scored twice, James. Great. It's like, I don't know. I don't think...
I know, because there were no power plays.
They... Like, we disagree on this. I think you're being a little too kind. They had opportunities on the power play, not a lot, but they didn't convert. And I mean, we can get into Keefe at some point.
But just might not make... What I'm saying, Jonas, it might not make a whole lot of sense to build your team to win on... Like, Edmonton's running into the same thing. Like, they're built to win with their power play. And if there's just... When you get down to the key moments of a series, game 5, 6, and 7 of a series, if there's no power plays, then... What's the point in having an amazing power
play? But were they built to be a power play team? I don't think that that's entirely true. They were built, like, they're a high-powered offense. Like, they...
But the Leafs' regular season record is built in part on being good on special teams, right? Good on the power play.
Fair. I mean, they were 8th in 5-on-5 goals during the regular season.
Well, they finished as the 7th last team in the playoffs, so...
Well, I mean, so we can start talking about that now. I believe the goal Nylander scored... in game 5 was his first 5-on-5 goal of the playoffs. We talked a lot about Tavares' struggles at 5-on-5, which, you know, that was an issue obviously in the regular season, not just producing, but obviously carrying play. Matthews obviously didn't have a 5-on-5 goal in the series. He's maybe the greatest 5-on-5 goal scorer in the league, or had been before this year. I don't know, like, they just didn't... I mean, you even go back to that Tampa series, James, like, there was no point where they were like humming on all cylinders, like, where offensively they were just like dynamic and dangerous. And I mean, how many, whatever you want to describe it, how many Leafy games, like, where they're clicking, do you think they had in the playoffs? Three?
No, you're 100%. I mean, we kept saying it in the Tampa series. And the funny thing is, I think they were better in the Florida series than they were in Tampa, right? Like, and they lost some of those games at key moments.
Yeah.
Like, they looked more in control in more of the Florida games. But no, I don't come away... That's part of, like, I don't come away from these playoffs saying that they looked like one of the best teams in the postseason. You know, they won a round against a beat up Tampa team, but you don't come away like overly impressed with everything that happened.
Well, so if you look in the series against Florida, these were their leading scorers. Morgan Rielly led the team with 4 points in 5 games.
I mean, he was amazing.
He was excellent, and he was excellent in the first round. Number two, tied for two, Marner and Nylander had 3 points in 5 games. Then you had, what is it, six guys with 2 points. Bunting, Lafferty, O'Reilly, Kampf, Matthews, McCabe. And you look at the goals in the series, like they get two from Nylander. They get one from Nyes, one from Marner, one from Bunting, one from Lafferty, one from Kerfoot, Gustafson, Riley, and O'Reilly. Like they just, I mean, the fact that, Matthew Nyes goes out and like it really dinged them. I mean, it's not a great sign. Like we talked about it in that Tampa series, James, like their stars, I don't think they had great series, but they came through in some important moments. Obviously, Matthews had the big game where he scores a couple third period, was it third period goals? But he scores a couple goals. But they're built on their stars being really great, and they weren't great. And this is kind of a persisting story. So what does that make you think about their way that they're built and what they have to do now with those guys?
Well, I think part of the story is going to be, I'm assuming Monday they're going to do the locker cleanout day and everyone's going to talk and maybe we'll hear. I mean, Matthews had to be hurt just with the way he was shooting the puck and handling the puck. And I mean, that's going to be part of the equation here. You know, I've seen a lot of people are saying, you know, trade everybody. And I mean, if this was Matthews being hurt, it would make, doesn't make any sense to base what you're going to do with him on a new contract on. I mean, he played hurt most of the season. Mm-hmm. I don't know as for the other guys. I mean, it seemed for sure O'Reilly was hurt. I don't know what was going on with TJ Brody. I've never seen him struggle that much. I'm assuming that potentially he was hurt. And we don't know about Tavares, Marner, Nylander. In terms of how the team's built, I mean, I think what's going to happen here, it feels like there's going to be a new coach, potentially a new GM. There's going to be different star players, I'm assuming, especially if they change a GM. I mean, and even if they don't, you know, I'm sure that there's going to be conversations if they decide to bring Dubas back about what are you going to change to fix this or to make it so we have a different result next time.
Yeah. Well, we'll get into Dubas in a little bit, but I want to dig in a little bit more on their top guys. This has been kind of a pattern where they've not been able to find another gear in the playoffs. What do you think that means? Like, how much of it is random? How much of it is personality? Do you think like they just, I don't know. Like I wondered after that Game 3, if there's just a gear that those guys don't have. And I mean, we saw it at times, like Nylander had some moments, but it's not been enough, especially in these really important spots like that Game 3 where they just don't have it. Like, do you believe that that can change? Do you believe that they should stick with it? Or do you think now is the time, like they absolutely have to get rid of one of those guys? And I'm assuming we're not talking about Matthews, so it's one of the other three.
Yeah, I mean, I think that that's what's going to happen. And I mean, it feels like it'd be awfully tough to move off of Tavares. Like, I don't know if that's even possible. You know, this was always going to be, I think the question you're asking is, it's a little bit different for every guy.
Yeah.
You know, I think for Tavares, he just kind of is what he is right now. Like, he's not that effective 5-on-5. He's a really good power play player who's not a good skater.
Yep.
Who's not great at controlling play. You know, there were key games in the series where they're playing him like 15, 16 minutes and he makes $11 million. And if there's not a lot of power plays in a series like this, then he's just not $11 million worth of effectiveness. So, you know, we always kind of knew that the downside of signing that contract was, I mean, there were two things that hurt them with the Tavares contract. You know, one is that the cap has been flat ever since it's been signed, which they never anticipated. And the other one is, they haven't won in the years where he was going to be the most productive. You know, when you sign those contracts to guys that are 28, 29 years old and they're long contracts, you kind of make a deal with the devil a little bit where you know that you might get burned in the last 2 or 3 years. And that's part of what's happening right now with him.
So he doesn't score in the series. He finishes with one assist, which he got on the Nylander goal in Game 5. What I would say to that, and I think you made some good points, is this was a foreseeable issue that they didn't address. Like, we were talking about this last summer. We were talking about this probably the summer before. They chose to bring him back as their number two center, chose not to address it last offseason. They sort of address it at the trade deadline, but then they don't play O'Reilly as their second center throughout the playoffs. Like, I mean, I think you're right. Like, Tavares is what he is. Like, he's 32. He's slowing down. He's never been the quickest guy. But this was something that they didn't address before. That was an issue in last year's playoffs. In the playoffs before, well, I guess not the playoffs before that, because he was
it's
hurt.
Interesting, Jonas. You know, yeah. They get O'Reilly and then they dip their toe in with it right away and move Tavares to the wing. And remember, it was that first game they had O'Reilly, right? Yeah. And I was surprised. I think we were in Seattle. Was that the first game? Maybe I'm misremembering.
I think that was the first game. No, it was at a home game, remember? Because they got them right after the trade, and there was that home game on the Saturday.
Okay.
And they played him at center, you're right, and pushed Tavares to the wing. And then they kind of went away from it.
Yeah, I was surprised that they did it. And then, like, they just didn't look at it very long. And I don't know if that's because they didn't like the way Tavares looked at center, or they didn't like the way their third line looked, or what it was, but... You know, something we've talked about a lot, like, I think there needs to be an evolution with Tavares. I mean, if you can't move him, which, I mean, he's got the hammer there with the no movement clause. You know, he's got three young children. He's from here. He's the captain of the team. I don't know. Just, to, you know, I've been talking to some people about this, and people don't think it's possible.
I have a rule, the David Clarkson rule, that anything is possible, so I won't rule anything out. But yeah, like, it's, there's lots.
Well, I mean, do you like retain $4 or $5 million and then like see if he's willing to go anywhere? I mean,
yeah, it's a good question. It's just like, I guess my point, James, is like, they should have been preparing for this way earlier. Like, they should have had him playing on the wing to start the season. They should have found it. I mean, it's just, it was an issue that they didn't address. And I think,
I wonder if it's something he doesn't want to do.
I mean, from everything that Sheldon Keefe said, this is just what he said, like, that this is something that they've been talking about for a long time. It's like, well, great, but like, why wasn't it
done?
Well,
I know for a fact, Jonah, like, they've been talking for a long time about Tavares's deficiencies, like some of the things that he doesn't do well. And it's, you know, a lot of it's just like, you know, protecting the puck and like, you know, they've had to do video work with him looking at stuff. And so he's like the one that if you could move off anybody, that's who it would be. But I don't know if you can.
Well, I guess part of the conversation is, does asking him make him consider whether he wants to stay? I mean, and I think the other part about it is, I think you have to really consider changing the captaincy. Like, I don't know I think that stuff is all a bit overblown, but just symbolically, like, you can't keep running the same thing back and back and back. And like,
you turn it over to Riley.
Well, that's the question, is like, who do you turn it over to? Like, and it doesn't matter. And I don't know. Do you turn it over to Matthews if he hasn't signed an extension? I don't know.
Is it a carrot for the Matthews situation? I mean, maybe it's something that helps get an extension done. I mean, we're probably going to talk about every guy here, right? So,
well, we'll talk about the four big guys. And I think we should talk now about Matthews and Marner. This is like a little bit of I mean, I think you're probably right. I think Matthews was playing hurt. We know he was playing hurt throughout the season, but this has been a theme where those two guys in particular.
I was asking around and no one was saying no, people didn't want to say what was hurt or what was going on, but
James, like, when you play, we have to judge them on their play. Like, we have to judge them on what they did, and they didn't perform.
But my point, though, is, Jonas, like, you don't want to, like, give up on a guy because he played through whatever it was. Like,
oh, I mean, I'm not saying that. Like, I'm not saying that.
Yeah, I mean, we can judge him on his play, but, like, I mean, that's spilt milk at this point. I mean, it's over, right? Like,
Yeah, but we have to look at the milk, James. That's what this podcast is.
Well, no, but, like, they need to decide what happens now, right? Like, I mean...
But I think that's what I want to ask you is, like, I mean, this is not 1 year. So, this is, like, that's why, as much as, like, maybe he was hurt is a thing. But this is other years where there is... You've looked at their regular season, and then you've looked at their playoffs, and the regular season has... The playoffs have never matched the regular season. For those two guys especially, those are the two best players on the team. Is that something that you have to think about now moving ahead? Is like, are they going to be able to get to that place where they can elevate in the playoffs? Like, look at, I mean, we've seen with Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl and Pasternak and all these guys. Like,
it's hard to see a world where if they're moving off Matthews that they're still a contender, right?
No, I don't think they should move off Matthews, but like, this is It's concerning that this keeps happening with those two guys especially.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know that they should play together in the playoffs. Like, we've seen it not work so many times.
Well, but that gets to another problem, and that goes back to Tavares. Tavares Marner didn't really work in these playoffs. And really, yeah. Tavares only was effective when Nylander was just like going at 110 miles an hour. When he was like rocking in game four, that line looked fine. But when he's not at that level, they just can't survive.
The other elephant in the room, which I don't know gets talked about enough, is like, do these guys want to stay and keep doing this? Like, do they think, I mean, the potentially the biggest problem for whoever the GM is like, Matthews is like, you know what? I put in 7 years here, got 1 year left on my contract. You know, I can play one more year if you want, but like, it just feels like this isn't going to work. Or Nylander could say the same thing and say, you know what? I'm going to like, didn't work.
Yeah.
It was, you know, I had a, you know, put some of the best years of my career in here. And I don't know, like, I don't know for sure that everybody wants to come back. I'm assuming that Tavares and Marner want to stay.
You would think, obviously, they're local guys, but like, there was some edge to Marner when they got down 3-0, and not in like the way that you want to see. Like, it almost felt like,
well, he was back to where he's like the headspace he was in a couple years ago, it felt like.
Yeah,
right? Where
he felt like aggrieved, but like, what, I mean, what do you want? I don't know what people are supposed to say when you go down 0-3 and you've lost in the playoffs like all these different years. And like,
was that a reaction to like something someone said to him that day? Or was like, read something somewhere?
It seemed like it was a reaction to the general tone, I guess, of where things were, that they were being criticized, and I obviously criticize harshly, and he doesn't check social media, he says, but like, there's no way it doesn't get back to him at some point. But like, that stuff, like, that's, you would have liked to have seen him or one of those guys say, you know what, the criticism is fair, like, we have to be a lot better, not we're not paying attention to what anyone on the outside thinks. Like, I kind of wanted to hear or see more accountability from those guys, more fire about themselves as opposed to what was being said. And maybe that doesn't matter. I don't know.
I don't know if you had a chance to read Pierre LeBrun's piece today, but you know, he kind of contrasted the way that Florida was and the way the Leafs were. And like, I mean, like the whole way through, Matthew could, like, it was almost like Florida didn't have a care in the world. Like, they were just, they were happy to be there and they were enjoying it and they had a great time. Whereas, you know, the Leafs seemed kind of miserable and tight and just really crushed under the burden of expectations that have been on them for so long. And,
yeah,
you know, I think Jonas, like, honestly, like, they're all terrific players.
Yep. Some of the best players this team has ever had in like over 100 years.
The changes that are going to have to be made are just going to be to like change, to get out from under that cloud that's hanging over everybody.
Well, and that's the thing, like, how much change is it? And so, like, I think now is probably a good time. Let's take a break and then let's get into Sheldon Keefe.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
All right, so we are going to talk about Kyle Dubas. We'll talk about Brendan Shanahan, but let's talk about the coach. So I don't know that you would say he had a great playoffs. I'll just ask you that. What did you think of the job that he did, and how much of this do you think falls on him?
I just think that with the lifespan that coaches have in the NHL, if you lose four times with a good team in the playoffs, early in the playoffs, your job security. Like, let me ask you, I'm going to throw it back at you, sure. Jonas, instead of evaluating his playoffs. What do you think the chances are that he's back?
I guess part of it is tied to Dubas and whether he comes back and whether if he comes back.
If it's a new GM, I don't think there's any chance.
There's no chance. Comes back. But if it is still Dubas, we know that this is his guy. Like, this is the only coach he's hired. How much of it does he think is a Sheldon Keefe problem? Like, is he willing to be, I guess, how honest is he willing to be with himself about some of Sheldon Keefe's deficiencies?
Like, I mean, he might not have a choice, right?
Like, he might not have a choice. Yeah. I would think that that's what it would be, honestly.
Like, if he goes into, I don't know how, if he goes into a meeting with Shanahan and has to present his plan for what the future looks like, or if he has to go talk to ownership directly, but Dubas would have to present his plan. And if he goes in there and says, oh, you know, I'm running it back and we have a good team and we're keeping the coach and our core four, I don't, like, the decision from ownership is not going to be, who are already on the fence about bringing Dubas back.
Yeah.
The decision feels like they'll go another direction and get someone who's willing to make some changes.
I think that's right. The fact that they did not play well for the most part in the playoffs is obviously prominently player related, but it's also on the coach. Like, that is literally the job of the coach to get the most out of the players. Offensively, they didn't, I mean, all playoffs, even in that Tampa series, they didn't control play. I thought there were some things that I didn't like. I think his greatest strength is honestly his greatest weakness is we talked about this before the playoffs. I think he overcoaches at times. Like, I think he sometimes just doesn't stand back and just let things play out. It's like always like moving this and moving that and moving this and moving that. And I thought it was detrimental at times in the playoffs. What about you?
Yeah, I talked to some coaches around the league, what they saw from Keefe and what their criticisms of him would be. And, you know, they talked about kind of part of it was like the composure, like getting overly emotional sometimes. Part of it was the system really didn't adapt to the opponent. And just finding ways to get more out of the top players, which, I mean, I don't know. Anyway, those are the criticisms of Keefe that, I mean, it's the technical part with coaching is challenging sometimes to evaluate.
Sure.
You know, remember we were talking about when Tampa was hemming them in their zone. It's like, is this like the system not working? Is this the players not like doing executing or like what's going on here? But they looked shitty in that Tampa series for a lot of those games.
Yeah.
And there was some adaptation, I think, you know, because they looked better in when they eventually closed out this series. But then you get into another series against Florida, and it felt especially, Jonas, that they didn't adapt offensively quickly enough against Florida. We talked about this early in the series, but they had to score more goals that were just like garbage crap goals around the net. Like, and how many of those did they get in this series?
They didn't get a lot. And like, they talked about like making life harder on Bobrovsky, and they didn't really.
They didn't really know. They had a shit ton of shots in that game, game five.
Yeah.
Like, would they have 52 or something like that?
Yeah.
Bobrovsky makes 50 saves, but he was good. But I don't know. The Leafs just had to find a way to score ugly. I mean, that's just the way that Florida was trying to play them, where they were giving them the perimeter shots. They were blocking quite a bit. Bobrovsky was saving the ones he could see, and there just wasn't enough. Like, how many rebounds were the Leafs able to get to? Florida did a really good job of like protecting the front of the net, it felt like. You look at the high danger chances. I know that the Leafs had a lot, but I don't know.
Well, I mean, the guys who got some of the best opportunities, honestly, were like Kampf and Lafferty, who were just like,
yeah,
attacking the net. And
but I thought Kampf played really well.
He did.
Like, I was surprised. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and I thought he should have played more in that series. Like, I thought they should have moved O'Reilly up and just played Kampf more. But
what was interesting, I think Lafferty and Kampf didn't play that much in game five, right? Like, you know, Marner.
Yeah. It felt like they played. I mean, Kampf played 16 minutes. Lafferty played 11 and a half.
Right.
And
yeah.
I mean, I believe James.
He was noticeable.
Yeah, I think the forwards who were on the ice for the most 5-on-5 goals were Kampf and Lafferty in that series, which is alarming, obviously, if you're the Leafs. But so I guess the question to some of the points you're making is, how much of that is just the types of stars that they have don't really score those kind of goals? Like, I guess, I mean, Tavares obviously scores most of his goals around the net. Matthews, Marner, and Nylander, like, they're more finesse-based. Like, how much of that is on
Keith? You're asking, we started this like talking about the coach. So, I mean, the coach has got to come up with a scheme that works based on what he's got. I don't know. I mean, maybe you play Matthews with a couple ditch diggers that are going to go to the front of the net.
Yeah, he never did that.
I don't know the answer. Like, maybe you play Matthews with, I mean, who would be the best? Maybe you play Matthews with O'Reilly on the left wing and Achari or something and just tell them just to go to the net.
Well, I don't know. And I thought, James, like, I thought he never let anything settle. Like, just about every game, there was some kind of change. And, like, I can't imagine players love that, where, like, every single game, it's a different line, it's a different combination, it's different responsibilities. Nothing set. Like, I understand the impulse. Nothing was really working. But if you don't let anything kind of play out and get going, maybe it doesn't work.
We saw a lot of, like O'Reilly was always the third line center, and Marner was always with Matthews, and Nylander was with Tavares. And
well, and that's the thing. Like, he did not change. That was one thing that he could have changed and didn't. He didn't go back to that O'Reilly with Tavares. Like, clearly, Tavares needed that help, needed more help than they were giving him.
I think we got to be careful, though, Jonas. It feels like we're criticizing Keith for changing too much and then also criticizing him for not changing more.
But both things can be true, James. Like, I mean, I was critical of the fact that they changed their number one power play unit days left in the regular season. Like, there was literally no reason to make that change. They had one of the top power plays in the NHL. I think it was second. And all of a sudden, you're taking off the 40 goal scorer to put O'Reilly there. Like, why?
Well, the only thing I would say is that, I mean, the power play was effective against Tampa. I mean, the thing that I noticed is that power play 2 was a lot more effective with Nylander on it.
They had only one guy really on that number one power play unit that scared you with his shot, and that was Matthews. And once you take away Matthews, I mean, they scored a bunch in that Tampa series, but obviously they didn't score. And again, like, it's just an example, James, of like what I'm talking about. 25% overcoaching. Their penalty kill was 73%, by the way. And then there's like other things, like, I mean, we could pick through a lot of different stuff. Like, Mark Giordano plays in 78 games. He plays 19 minutes a game. And then he's just completely out of gas.
Yeah. Well, that was definitely, watching Giordano in the playoffs, you think back to when, like, Riley and they had all the injuries on D and they were playing Giordano so much. And it's like, I get why they did it, because he was playing really well, but it makes sense that he was completely toast by the postseason. Giordano looked so slow in this series.
He looked like he shouldn't have been in the league. Like, he looked like he didn't belong on the ice.
Yeah. And he had some really good games during the season. I mean, it shows too, the pace just changes completely in the playoffs, right? Like, I mean, they got him under contract for another year. I mean, he's basically going to have to just be a third pair guy that plays like 13 minutes next season.
Well, and so that's one of the things I struggle with sometimes with Keith, is like, sometimes he takes a long approach. So he'll try things in games because it's an 82 game season. Like, I want to try things. I want to see things. But then he also is coaching every game to the end point of playing Marner 23 minutes a game in March, which like blew my mind at the time. Like, I didn't understand that. Like,
yeah.
So,
I mean, it did seem like there was some fatigue for the star players.
Yeah.
Although, I mean, they get that break in the Florida series. Like, you feel like you get the 2 days off, you should come out.
Yeah, so I don't know what percentage you put on the coach, but like you pointed out, this is usually the move that gets made because it's easier to fire the coach.
That's
right?
The thing, Jonas, is like, I don't even know if it's worth like litigating the whole everything Keith did this year, because I don't think it matters.
It is worth litigating for sure. Of course it is.
Well, I just think he's not going to be back. That's all.
But we
I don't know if it's worth litigating it to decide whether he comes back or not, because I don't know if that's.
But the point is, there are reasons why he shouldn't come back.
You know, it's an interesting question, Jonas, is like, who are you looking for as a coach? Like, what are you looking for that's different?
It might just be that different. I mean, he wasn't able to, I mean, to this point, get through to their star players to the point that they were able to find the gear that's necessary. And I think your other point is right. Like, some of the, I think he, the messaging in the media in Toronto is probably more important than just about anywhere else. And I thought that there were times like where his emotions probably got the best of him. And I thought there were times he could have sold a different message, because sometimes what happens, you know how this goes as well as anyone, when you tell the media something, so let's say you talk up the team, what do the reporters do? Well, they go to the players and they say, Sheldon is saying you're playing great. And so all the players are like, oh, things are great. Like we can do this. And I thought at times like it just didn't happen. Like there was no, I don't know, none of that.
It's true that both he and Dubas are super emotional people. I mean, everyone saw that with Dubas during the playoffs, you know, the screaming from the press box. And we've seen it with every, I mean, like Ron Wilson ran into this in a big way. Carlisle ran into this. Like how you interact with the media, like that's really the portrait of yourself that you give to the public as well. And it's not an easy thing, because you have to do it every single day, day after day after day after day. The one person who it didn't seem to affect at all was Babcock. Like he just didn't give a shit.
But he also did a good job of public messaging. Like he kind of sold things in a certain way and packaged them a different way. He obviously was far more experienced on a big stage than Keefe. And you're right. Like even James, like you go back to his comments after game three, and like they were bad in game three. Like there's no getting around that. One of the things I regretted not mentioning in my story is it was a good long time before Sheldon Keefe came out to do his post game. So he had time, I thought, to kind of sell.
Well, sometimes it seems like he does that to like calm himself down,
but
right?
He didn't. And that was what was so surprising, is like he could have come out and sold a different package. Obviously, it's hard to sell a different package when the team plays bad and you're down 0-3, but disappointing, baffling.
I don't think he lost the players though. Like I think
no.
I think if you're going to criticize Keefe, it's maybe he's too much of a player's coach, as opposed to like, remember when there was all that heat around Keefe early in the season?
Yeah.
People were saying, oh, you know, fire the coach, whatever it was. What was that, 8 games in or whatever? You know, when I asked around and it's like, no, the players like this guy and don't want him to stay. Whereas when you did that with Babcock, it's like, get this guy out of here. Or Carlisle or Wilson.
Yeah, but so with I would counter that, James.
With Keefe, I think the Stars like him.
I mean, who knows? Who can say for sure? I mean, we had a very public situation, obviously, in October with Marner, and like they moved past that, obviously. But I guess my counter would be a coach's job is to push the players further than they think they can go. That's the job. Like, inevitably, the players are not going to like the coach because of that, because like they're needling you constantly to find another gear. And maybe he wasn't able, I mean, clearly he was not able to get them to that point where they found that other gear. And that's, I mean, look at these series, James. Like his first series is the Columbus series. Weird situation for sure. They were bad. The Montreal series, they go up 3-1. They lose that series. Their stars kind of
Well, that's
faded.
What I'm saying. Was he too much of a player's coach? Like, did he not?
I don't know. It's hard to say, like, without obviously knowing what goes on.
You don't want to alienate
the
player stars, right? Like, we're kind of in a different era in the NHL where like the old guard are moving out and people are more player friendly coaches. And but I don't think he's going to be back. Like, I mean, I think the chances are incredibly small.
Well, it's hard to see ownership saying you can bring back the coach after that. Hard to see it.
Well, and I just think it's going to be an easier move to make than, you know, we talked about Tavares. Like, you're not going to be able to make all of the moves with your roster that you're going to want to make necessarily. The coach is like such a disposable piece. That's why they get changed so much in hockey.
I mean, the thing is, like, he, to give him credit, like, he coached, I think it's like the top two and maybe even the top three best regular season teams in the franchise history. But, like, at a certain point, no,
well,
that doesn't
matter.
His
overall coaching record's like one of the best for any coach in NHL history.
Yeah.
In a regular season.
Well, and
I mean,
and
he's going to get it. Someone asked me last week, is he going to get another job? I mean, someone's going to hire him.
Yeah, for sure. But I mean, one of the risks that they took in hiring him in the first place is like he had never coached in the NHL. Now, his regular season success suggests that that doesn't matter or didn't matter. But in the playoffs, like, we saw situations where it looked like it did matter. And like, he had better, like, let's be honest, James, like, he had better teams than Babcock did. Like, this, is this the best team that they had in this era? Maybe. I mean,
yeah, last year and this year. Yeah. I mean, I think that last year's team was similar. They had better goaltending this year, was part of it.
Which kind of brings us to what we should discuss next, which is Kyle Dubas and his situation and some of the moves that he made. Let's take a break and then let's get into Dubas and obviously Shanahan as well.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
I should mention, James, before we go further, just if people want to read more about this series, DGB wrote about the infamous call from Game 5, which is puzzling as shit still.
You didn't like that one, eh?
It didn't make any sense. And you know what I didn't know and don't understand is I used to think that you could request a pool reporter to go and talk to the officials. And apparently that's not the case anymore, which is insane.
I think that's been gone for quite a while.
That's so insane. All they send is like an email that didn't make any sense. Like the official, the ref.
The refs are completely black box for us. Like we don't get any access to them at all. We don't get... I mean, the league doesn't, yeah, all they do is send out that email. There's not even anyone we can talk to about calls that are bad or, I mean, other sports have way more accountability with officiating than that, right?
They do. The NBA releases, like, they'll tell you which calls officials got wrong in the last 2 minutes of a game. Like
That's what they should do. The NHL is just like...
They're antiquated, so worried in so many ways.
Yeah, it's just, it's backwards, like... And as I said off the top, I mean, this series did not had hardly any power plays in it, and it doesn't make any sense because like there was a lot of stuff that got missed.
Yeah, there were some egregious high sticks that got missed. There was
Look at Marner gets like doesn't he get like elbowed high
by Mark Stahl
like right at the end of the third period for I don't even think he had the puck.
He did not. So other stories that you can check out. You wrote about what's next for the Leafs. I wrote about what's looking like the end of the current era. Fitzy wrote about Paul Maurice. Pierre LeBrun wrote about the contrast between the Leafs and the Panthers. And our boy Cloak, he kind of took you behind the scenes on what that looked like last night.
And a lot of swearing.
Yeah, lots of swearing. So go to theathletic.com/Leaf Report if you haven't signed up. Check that out. And there's going to be obviously tons to pick through in the weeks ahead. And then we got free agency and blah, 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 and the draft.
Actually, Jonas, I was just going to say quickly that I wanted to apologize that we didn't have the show after game four. I ended up getting sick and taking a bunch of flu meds and sleeping through when we were supposed to record. So that was 100% on me. I had a lot of people ask where the show was. So I apologize to you because you were sitting there waiting for me and I didn't, I was asleep and my alarm must've been going off for like 45 minutes without waking up. So
it happens.
It's my bad. Yeah.
So apparently. Let's talk about Kyle Dubas. I think he built a really good team. I think he built, like Sheldon Keefe said, a team that had the pieces for the most part to win the Stanley Cup. I thought his trade deadline was good for the most part. There was one specific move I did not like that much at the time, which we'll get to. The goaltending was both good and bad. What's your evaluation of his season?
I remember I did the report cards after round one and I gave Dubas an A-, and some people said, well, why doesn't he get an A+? And it's like, because they still have $4.7 million tied up in a goalie that can't play.
Yes.
Like,
big deal.
I feel like we've talked about this so much already, but like that, I mean, that was the black mark on the season, right? Like if they just went with another Samsonov and another goaltender, and who knows, maybe Wohl emerges and he ends up playing more during the season or whatever. Like you were more vocal about the Matt Murray bet and how much you didn't like it last summer than I was. It was a bad bet. Like it, you know, and they got this turd of a contract that's still on the books for next year. I mean, it's one of the major things they're going to have to figure out in the next 6 weeks is how to get rid of that contract.
Yes. Well, and you know what? I was talking to someone this morning, James, and they pointed out that a GM's job in part is obviously to have foresight. It was completely foreseeable that the issues with Matt Murray would be issues with Matt Murray because Matt Murray has never been healthy in his entire career.
Well, and especially lately, like he's been like Ottawa was just like, we can't work with this guy. Like,
yeah, I mean, I think there was a quote from DJ Smith this season. I think it was from this season where he basically said like he was fine when he played. He just never played. Like he was always hurt. And that was, they decided to make that bet anyway. I still don't really understand why they didn't get Ottawa to retain that much for some reason. And like you mentioned, he has another year on the contract. So it's like, yeah, the Samsonov bet worked out, but like you were paying 4.7 to a guy who, how many games did he play? Did he play 30 games? Did he play 20?
He did not play a lot. And you got one more year too.
Yes.
Like
he played 26 games and he didn't play a second in the playoffs, obviously. I mean, what did you think of the fact that they did not play him when there was an opportunity to play him?
They didn't believe in him, Jonas. Like they didn't think he could get it done. Like he just wasn't good enough when he came back from injury at the end of the year. What I think is they felt like they had a better chance to win with Wohl and Ned, and with the way that Wohl played, they were right. They didn't believe in him by the end of the season. And why would they? Why should they? Like, I mean, I don't know if Matt Murray's going to play in the NHL anymore. That might be one where you're paying someone to buy the contract out and then maybe he's got to go back to the AHL or something, but he's coming real close to the end of the road.
He will be 29 in later this month, actually, a couple weeks.
I guess he could be a backup somewhere. I mean, I guess if you only need him to play 25 games and pay him $1 million, then maybe it's fine.
Yeah, but and you know what, James? Like this is something we talked about last summer where it was like this was the bet that could decide their season. I don't know if it decided their season.
Well, no, it didn't because Samsonov and Wohl played so well. Like goaltending didn't end up sinking their year. It worked out for them.
But it's certainly not a great allocation of resources to pay 4.7 to a guy who plays 26 games and who it was foreseeable might only play 26 games. So
yeah,
that's not great. And
it was the biggest bet of the offseason they made last year. Like it was, yeah, they didn't have a lot of cap space and they gave 4.7 to the...
Well, and one of the other bets they made is on Jake Muzzin, and they really missed Jake Muzzin, man. Like that was, and I did not love Jake McCabe as a replacement for Jake Muzzin. I wrote that at the time. I wrote that before they made the trade. And like you looked last night, or I shouldn't say last night, game five, through two periods, McCabe played 7 minutes. Now he played a lot in the third period, but they made the wrong bet. Like he wasn't, their defense, James, yeah, like by the end, like they barely had anyone that you were like, like they can play that guy. Like this was just before you go, these were the minutes for the D in game five. So Riley played 28:39, Brody played 26:23, Justin Hall played 24:52, Luke Shen, good trade, 19:30, McCabe 18:57, Liljegren 19:51. Did I cover everyone? I think and Giordano 9:29. Go ahead.
This is one of the things with in terms of offseason changes that I haven't really seen anyone talk about. Like they need to keep working on the defense.
Yes, it's a big problem.
Now, that said, I mean, they did control play in a lot of games. They didn't give up a ton of goals.
They didn't control play in a lot of games, James. Like, out of the whole playoffs? Well,
against the Panthers, they did.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, they control play game one, game two, game four, and game five. So,
and lost.
I mean, against Tampa, they did not. You're right.
Yeah.
Overall, how confident can you feel in your blue line? I mean, Luke Shen was like, imagine if Luke Shen doesn't play the way he did. Imagine where they'd be on defense.
Imagine if I told you that their second best defenseman in the playoffs was Luke Shen. You'd be like, that's great for Luke Shen. That's not really good for the Leafs.
And like, that's not to take anything away from him because he played fantastic.
Excellent.
And
I maximized his abilities.
They should try really hard to bring him back.
Yeah.
So you got McCabe under contract. I mean, I think the thing with McCabe is he's got to be on your second or third pair. You can't be playing him against top lines on the first pair 24 minutes. Like, it makes no sense.
Well, and this was foreseeable. Like, yes, he was on the top pair of like one of the worst teams in the league. And if you looked throughout his career, he was like an 18 to 20 minute guy. Like, he wasn't for bad teams. Like, he wasn't even a 20 whatever minute guy for bad teams. Like, he was like 18 to 20 minutes, and like, they saw him play on Chicago's top pair and decided he might be good enough. And I thought, James, like, who knows what went on behind the scenes. I think valuing the fact that they could have him under contract for $2 million beyond this season mattered too much. Like, I told you at the time, I don't care about beyond this year. Like, they needed to figure out a way to maximize.
Well, they obviously thought he was good. They thought he was good too, right? Like, I think that the future years enticed them to give up what they gave up to get him.
Yeah. Well, then that was a mistake, because if I could see that he wasn't good enough, then they should be able to see that he wasn't good enough.
We're going to have all summer to talk about this, but like, what does the blue line look like next year? Like, is there any of those pieces that you look at moving on from? I mean, Liljegren.
Hall's a free agent.
Right.
Shen's a free agent.
Gustafsson's a free agent.
You mentioned Giordano has another year. Liljegren has another year.
Giordano comes back as your 6-7 guy, right? Like, he's your extra. They have Timmins signed.
They almost have to go into next year, James, thinking like, when the playoffs start, Giordano's not playing. Like, almost like Simmons-ish. Spezza-ish. Which means they need more D.
Well, I would try and bring Shen back.
Yeah,
for sure. You know, if Shen's going to sign for $1 million or less, then it's a complete no-brainer to sign him.
Right. So, coming back, Riley, Brody, McCabe, Liljegren, and Giordano, that's five, which means they need to find like two top four-ish defenders, I think, and at least one really good defender.
I think you just try and find one really good guy. I think that's enough. If you can upgrade Hall and get someone who's, I mean, it could, if you get Shen, then it could even be a lefty and it would be fine. If you get one good left defenseman, I mean, right side would work as well.
Yeah, because then you're looking at Riley Shen is one of your pairs. Brody X is your other pair. And then McCabe Liljegren is your third pair. McCabe should be on the third pair. That's what I think he is.
I thought McCabe and Liljegren looked like they had good moments. I mean, they weren't perfect, but
then Liljegren had some moments.
Yeah, I know. Game. Yeah.
And I mean, like, I agreed with the decision to move on from Rasmus Sandin, but like, that's one guy that they don't have, obviously, now, and they got the first round pick, and that's fine. Like, I didn't see a future with Sandin playing in their top four, so I'm fine with that. But
the one thing I will say is they didn't get a whole lot of, like, there was hardly any offense from the defense, right? Like, and
it's just Riley.
You talk about,
yeah, it's just Riley.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, Cam Charron, I recommend people going to his website. He tracked like exits and entries and chance creation and things like that. And he has a stat like called, I think it's like chance assists, basically. Like, so if you set up a scoring chance, and like their D just like didn't really create a lot for the forwards, which has to be part of, like, we can focus on the big guys not scoring, but also if you have a blue line that's not able to, like, Brody's not, doesn't create offense. Shen doesn't really create offense. McCabe doesn't. Liljegren can at times. Giordano wasn't able to do it. Like, they're just, they'd need another guy who's like an all-around defenseman who can help the offense as well. It's one thing that, one of the advantages that Florida had is they were getting more offense from their defense.
Yeah, well, and I thought the guy that they should have tried to trade for was Orlov. I wrote that actually really early in the season that I think I wrote
he's
it after.
He's a UFA if you want him.
Yeah, well, I mean, the only thing is like he's going to be 32, but
he's going to be expensive.
He's going to be expensive, but like you need someone better. And like, that's why, I mean, obviously it didn't work out for Boston, but like he was the kind of guy that I thought could really replace Muzzin and play the kind of minutes that they needed him to play. And the other thing, James, is like I think Brody's going to be 33. Obviously, Giordano's old. Shen's not. I think Shen's 33. Is he 33 or 34? He's 33. Like it's, and McCabe is at 29, I think. Like, it's not like a young group. Yeah. It needs well, a refresh.
It's not a fast defense, and it's not a, you know, it's not really like a new age blue line, really.
No, which is interesting. And like, that was something Sheldon Keefe talked about earlier in the playoffs, where he basically said, I think he was asked like about the Leafs not really looking like the Leafs. And he said, well, we've kind of changed who we are stylistically. Like, they've gone away a little bit from skill and added more competitive, intangibly type guys. One guy who I thought was a good addition, I thought they should try to trade for him, was Noel Achari. Was exactly what I thought that they needed. Lafferty sat for some games in the playoffs, but by the Florida series, he was actually
was bad at, against Tampa.
He was bad like against Tampa.
Not effective.
Kampf is obviously a free agent. They're going to have to make a decision there. He's going to potentially cost too much. And you know what, James? Like the other guy, like one of their other big-ish moves from last offseason, I don't know how you feel about his season overall now that we have the playoffs, is Yarncroc wasn't expensive, 2.1, but like he's just limited. Like there's only so much he can do offensively. Like he just doesn't give you that much, honestly. Yeah.
And I liked him in game four. I thought he played really well. He helps you on the forecheck a little bit. One of the other stories in the series is it felt like Florida got more. I'd have to look at the numbers, but it felt like their third line was dangerous. Like they're having Reinhardt out there.
Well, I still don't know why the idea was to play O'Reilly with like Bunting and Achari. Like what is, I don't really get what the point of that line is. Like there was moments where O'Reilly and Achari were able to kind of soak up some of the difficult minutes, but they needed to find a way to get their top guys to produce, and I thought he could help them. And just to go back to Yarncroc, so he obviously plays 11 games, one goal, two assists, 3 points, and he averaged 14 and a half minutes. He had 10 shots in 11 games. Like that's just what he is. Like you look at his career, James, he has 5 goals in 86 career playoff games, and like he was playing in their top six by the end, and that's just, I don't know. I get it because he played well with Matthews, but like that's not great.
Do you think there's anything to, not even just talking about offense, but if you look at like controlling play and like the Leafs bottom six, really, I'm just bringing up the course of the playoffs, like Aston Reese, 36% for possession, Kampf, 40%, yeah. Kerfoot, 41%. Achari, 42%. I know everyone loves Achari, but like in terms of like controlling play, Lafferty, 45, like their third and fourth line spent a lot of time in their own end, really. And they lost the expected goals battle in the playoffs. Like expected goals for Kampf in the playoffs, 38%.
Yeah. Now to be fair though, I don't like, if you looked at the game at game five, the numbers for that line, I mean, there's so many different variations of it. But when Kampf played with Lafferty, better.
I know. I'm just saying overall for the playoffs, like
no, that was something we looked at.
They didn't control play
well, and they weren't lines that you were thinking like they can score. I mean, Achari actually did score a little bit. So did Lafferty. So did Kampf. Like, but yeah, to your point, like they stylistically changed. Like they got rid of Pierre Engvall, a move I was fine with. And they just tried to bring in different types of forwards, but like honestly, James, like that doesn't matter if the star players produce. It wouldn't have mattered.
Well, it's just if you're spending so much time in your own end territorially, it means your star players are taking more defensive zone draws, and like you're not there when they come on for their shift. The puck's coming back in your own end. You're not creating a lot of momentum for your team if your third and fourth line are at 40% possession or whatever.
Yeah.
The Leafs' top players in terms of controlling play, Matthew Nyes, Austin Matthews, Luke Shen, Marner, Riley, Brody's numbers at the end of the Nylander. And then there's some ugly numbers after that. You know, it's interesting, like Matthews, like overall, if you look at like the defensive play and everything was strong it just seemed like he couldn't rip the puck the way that he needs to.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And that leads you, I mean, he said earlier in the year that his hand was bothering him. So, I mean, it's conceivable it was bothering him again.
11 playoff games, and Auston Matthews was only on the ice for 7 goals at even strength. 5-on-5.
This is not enough. I mean, who was the leader in that category?
So it just wasn't like a lot. Like, they weren't getting scored on when he was out there, but they also weren't producing.
I'm looking 5-on-5, 7 goals for, 7 goals against. Yeah. William Nylander, 6 goals for, 11 goals against. Before we wrap, James, and we're going to talk again next week, I do want to talk briefly about Brendan Shanahan. This is 9 years now that he's been the president. I think he's done a lot of good things, obviously. Like, this organization, you forget how much of a...
It was a laughingstock.
Yeah, before he took over, and he's done a lot of things.
Complete disaster.
Yeah, to restore some order to it, to professionalize it, to make it, I think, like a big league operation, whereas before it felt at times very minor league-ish. But they've won 1 playoff round since he's been the president. How much do you think this is on him, and like, what do you think happens with him moving forward?
Well, I think it's, you know, it's been 9 years, a little over 9 years. For my taste, the early portion of the Shanahan era, like, it felt like it took a long time. Like, I didn't understand why they brought Carlisle back. And in the end, it ended up being part of the tank. But it was kind of like, that first year was kind of like an accidental tank.
Well, I think, James, at the time, he said that he wanted to kind of get a lay of the land.
Yeah.
I'm paraphrasing, but see what the organization was like.
I mean, did you really need that, though, after the season they had had before, the year before? Anyway, I mean, that's nitpicking at this point. I mean, we're going back 9 years. But that set them up for, you know, you hire Babcock before you have a GM. Then you bring in Lamorello. Lamorello does some things well, but makes some mistakes, which end up hurting you further into the future. They don't draft very well in that period, which hurts you now. Like, they don't have a lot coming from those drafts for 15, 16, 17. So there were some mistakes that happened where I think that Shanahan's directly involved in. If you go back to those years. And then the other thing that's complicating that it's hard to know is there's been a lot of people talking about the disagreements between Shanahan and Dubas. And it's hard to know some of the quote unquote mistakes that have been made the last couple of years, which one of those are 100% Dubas and which one of those was Shanahan involved in, or what good moves did he veto that didn't end up happening?
Well, when you're the boss at the top, it's all kind of on you, isn't it? Good and bad.
Yeah.
The end, right?
Yep. Yep. And it does feel a little bit like so much of the blame has gone to Keefe and Dubas, whereas I think, you know, like, Shanahan is, he's part of all of this.
Well, and to your point, like, I think the Babcock thing is a big deal. Like, not only did they signed him to an 8-year contract before they had a GM.
Well, I mean, Elliot Friedman was saying, and he probably has better insight into the ownership group than anybody that is around the league. He basically said that the way that the Babcock contract played out, where they had to pay out the last, what was it, 3 years?
I think it was
three
more
and a half
than
years.
That,
or,
yeah.
I mean, he did last 5 seasons, I think, of an 8-year deal. Yeah. I think it was like almost 3 full years. But anyway, I heard Elliot Friedman say at one point that the way that that played out, he thinks affected the way that they handled contracts. And potentially that contract going sideways is part of why Dubas didn't get an extension. Was, I believe, if I'm paraphrasing, but I believe that's what Elliot said.
I still think it wasn't the right decision to leave Dubas without a contract going into this year. But you're right.
Well, they could have given him a deal, they could have extended him 2 years or whatever, and then still just let him go at the end of the year if they decided that.
Yeah, it's not like money's an issue.
Well, I mean, it seems like it is because they didn't like paying out Babcock as much as they did. What was Babcock getting, $6 million a year?
Yeah, a lot. Yep.
And that's the other thing, too, is I've seen some people say, I'll bring Dubas back, but I only want him to come back for 2 years or whatever. And it's like, that, I don't think that's going to fly, because I think there's going to be other teams that are going to be willing to commit to him for longer. So I think if you want Dubas back, you got to just like, are you really committing to him?
Well, and I think the question Dubas might have is like, I want more say. Like, I don't want to have to run things through. I mean, who knows how this works?
I don't think Mike Jonas. I think for sure that's what he's going to want.
Well, that gets interesting because, like,
well, does Shanahan want to give that up? Or, I mean, he can just bring in a puppet GM, and you know, like, and the thing too, Jonas, is you got to get this settled in the next like 2 weeks because there's so much stuff that has to happen.
Yeah, the draft is like just over a month away, and there's free agency. Like, it's now.
You got to get Matthews and Nylander figured out.
Yep.
You got to get rid of Matt Murray. You got to figure out what to do. They got 10 UFAs. You got to figure out if you're like, if you want O'Reilly or Shen or any of these guys to come back, you got to get on that right away.
I think we'll talk about those guys next podcast. So we're anticipating recording another podcast after the Leafs do their locker cleanout day, which we think will be Monday. So stay tuned for that. Thank you for listening throughout the playoffs. We wanted to try to do this as much as we possibly could. So thank you to everyone for sticking with us. Thank you to our producer, Punch. And James, obviously, thank you to you. Is that a proper way to say it? Thank you to you. Thank you.
I'll take it. I'll take it, Jonas. Yeah, the response to the shows has been really, really great. I mean, it's a lot for us to try and do it after every game. We did our best. We missed the one game because of me. But certainly the number of people listening and everything made it worthwhile. And we're going to keep doing shows in the off season here, certainly as things happen. So, you know, keep the questions coming and tell your friends about us.
Tell your friends.
We can keep growing our audience.
That's a perfect way to wrap. James, we'll talk next week. Thank you.